Hello and welcome. This is Mark Weber. Thanks for joining me today. In my last talk, I spoke about Hitler's views on religion and Christianity, about the role of the churches and of religion in Third Reich Germany, and about the attitude and policies of the National Socialist Party and of the government in Hitler's Germany. Today I'm following up on that with a focus on the role of religion in Germany during the second half of the Third Reich era, and especially during World War II. I'll also be looking at the role of religion among the major powers in World War II, comparing the attitude toward religion, and especially Christianity, in the United States and the other Allied nations on the one hand, and the attitude toward and the role of religion and Christianity in Germany and the other nations of the Axis coalition during the Second World War. I want to put putting this all in context to refer again to the fact that during this entire period of the Hitler era, of the Third Reich era, and during World War II, the population of Germany was overwhelmingly Christian. About 95% of all Germans during this period were members or followers either of the Evangelical Lutheran Church or of the Roman Catholic Church. There were small minorities of non-religious people and of followers of smaller Christian denominations like Methodists, Baptists, and so forth, but the vast majority of the German population followed either the Lutheran or the Catholic denomination, Catholic religion, version of Christianity. And for that reason, both before the Hitler era and during the Hitler era and in the years afterwards, the Lutheran Church and the Catholic Church in Germany has had a preferred or a special status before the Hitler era, during the Hitler era, and afterwards. There was freedom of religion and freedom of conscience, but there was a preferential status for the Lutheran and Catholic churches, without, however, impeding on the freedom of religion, freedom of conscience for other religions. And during this period of time, during the Third Reich, people were free to leave the church altogether, to become even non-Christians. Many, a small minority of people who adhered to neither of those. And within the National Socialist Party, there were some prominent individuals, such as Alfred Rosenberg, who were not only non-Christian, they were somewhat anti-Christian. But the vast majority of people in the Third Reich were not only Christian, but they supported the National Socialist Party in part because the official party program explicitly declared its support for, as it put it, positive Christianity. And during the Third Reich era, especially in the early years, Hitler on numerous occasions emphasized the strong support of the government for the role and position of Christianity and of the major Christian denominations in Germany. This attitude was also reciprocated by the leaders of the Christian denominations in Germany, who again and again expressed their support for the new National Socialist government after it took power in 1933 and throughout the years of the Third Reich. Not only Catholic and Protestant leaders expressed support for the Hitler government, but also this support was expressed by leaders of smaller Christian denominations. For example, the Methodist bishop, a man named Otto Mella, was pretty fervent in his open support for Hitler's government. And he felt that he was doing so not only because this was good from a religious point of view, but also a patriotic duty. And to show his gratitude, Hitler made a personal gift in 1939 of 10,000 marks to a Methodist congregation so that it could purchase an organ for their church. Another Christian leader was the a prominent leader of the Baptist minority in Germany, a man named Paul Schmidt, who was also strongly supportive of the Hitler government. But that's not unusual. This support for Hitler and the National Socialist regime extended pretty much across the board, with only some very small but notable exceptions. One expression of the role or attitude toward Christianity during the Third Reich era was something called the Mother's Cross. Officially, it was called the Cross of Honor of the German Mother, and it was issued throughout the Third Reich era. It was a blue Christian cross with a swastika in the middle that was awarded to mothers who had four or more children. The bronze was given to those who had four or five children, silver for six or seven, and in gold for women that had eight or more children. But it was given only to mothers whose behavior was also exemplary. In other words, if they were neglectful or notorious in their conduct, it wasn't given. Now, this may seem unusual to many people in the United States or in many countries today, but it was not unusual even in Europe during this period of time. In fact, the German cross, the Mother's Cross that was issued during the Third Reich, was issued only after a similar medallion, a similar award, had been in place for many years in France. And other European countries issued similar medals to encourage motherhood, to encourage children, and so forth. But the point I'm making here in this regard is that the Mother's Cross, the main image of the Mother's Cross, was a Christian cross. It was a tastefully designed cross in blue, but on top of it was a smaller swastika. And this reflects, again, something of the attitude. This reflected not only the attitude of the government and its non-specific support for Christianity in a kind of general way, but also it reflected the sensibility, the outlook of the vast majority of the German people at that time. Now, that's not to say that during the Third Reich period there were sometimes conflicts between church leaders, notably Catholic leaders, and the state from time to time. But this has to be kept in context. And I'm going to go a little bit into detail later on about some of the conflicts that arose during the Third Reich era between some church leaders and the leadership, the state government. But again, this has to be kept in context. Even though that there were these disputes, nonetheless, until the very end of the war, not only were the vast majority of the people, but also the vast majority of religious leaders in Germany remained entirely loyal to and supportive of the National Socialist state and government. Now, one of the high points of dispute or of friction between the Catholic Church and the National Socialist state came in 1937, when the Vatican issued an encyclical issued in German, entitled With Burning Sorrow. That's unusual, because usually encyclicals are issued in Latin. But this was directed specifically to what the Vatican saw as a danger or a problem with the Third Reich government, the German government. And this has often been cited in the years since as an expression of Vatican dissatisfaction with the Hitler government. And it was. But it has to be kept in context. Anyone who reads this encyclical today cannot help but be struck, I think, that the objections and the qualms or misgivings that the Vatican is expressing in this encyclical toward some of the policies of the National Socialist state toward the Third Reich are far, far more applicable in the attitude toward of the Vatican today toward the policies of European governments, including Germany today, and, of course, the United States. the Third Reich government, in other words, to sum up here, was actually far closer in its policies toward its policies from a view that the Vatican would approve of than the policies in the United States or in other countries today. To take just one example, the Catholic Church has long had very strong opposition to abortion. It regards it as sinful, as a terrible, very bad sin, very wrong. And in the United States during the 1930s, and in Germany during that period, abortion was illegal. Well, today it's not only legal in the United States, the American Supreme Court has declared that states do not even have the right to forbid or prohibit abortion. And the Catholic Church on numerous occasions has expressed its unhappiness with the policy of the American government, which is so crassly, so strongly in opposition to the sensibility and the attitude not only of Catholics, but for many, many centuries of Christians in general. Now, to go back again to this encyclical issued in 1937 by the Vatican. It was read in all Catholic churches in Germany on a Sunday, and so it was widely known and widely understood. And it was publicized, of course, by the Catholic Church to the ability that it had to do so. But again, the criticisms are pretty astonishing from today's point of view. The Catholic Church was concerned that the National Socialist state was so popular that it was a competitor for allegiance of the German people, and especially of younger Germans. And the Catholic Church was very concerned that secular concerns, secular loyalties for individual pleasure, for materialism and so forth in the world might be more popular than devotion to the Catholic Church. But in the case of Germany, what the Vatican was worrying about and was concerned about in this encyclical was that the loyalty to the folk, the nation, was so strongly emphasized that the danger existed that it would divert Catholics in particular from support for and loyalty to the Catholic Church. I'm quoting at one point from this encyclical with burning sorrow, quote, "No one would think of preventing young Germans establishing a true ethnical community in a noble love of freedom and loyalty to their country. What we object to is the voluntary and systematic antagonism raised between national education and religious duty. That is why we tell the young, sing your hymns to freedom." That's a reference to songs, National Socialist songs, praising freedom and so forth. "But do not forget," the encyclical went on, "the freedom of the children of God. Do not drag the nobility of that freedom in the mud of sin and sensuality." Well, by today's standards, of course, sin and sensuality is far, far more rampant in the United States today or in Europe today than it ever was in 1937 in Germany. But again, this shows the sensibility and the attitude at the time. Of course, now, the encyclical goes on at another point, and I'm quoting from it. "You are told about sports. Indulged in with moderation and within limits, physical education is a boon for youth. But so much time is now devoted to sporting activities," that is, in 1937 in Third Reich Germany, "that the harmonious development of body and mind is disregarded, that duties to one's family and the observation of the Lord's Day are neglected. With an indifference bordering on contempt, the Day of the Lord is divested of its sacred character against the best of German traditions." Now, to put this in context, during the Third Reich, businesses were closed on Sunday. Also in the United States during that period, in fact up until about the 1960s, businesses were routinely closed on Sunday out of respect for and as an expression of Christian sensibility. But during the Third Reich era, there was a great deal of entertainment, including sports events. And the Catholic Church and the Vatican was concerned that this emphasis on sports was diverting people from the day of devotion to Holy Sunday. Well, by comparison today, of course, Sundays are entirely and overwhelmingly secular here in the United States. There's no vestige left of that anymore. In fact, on Sundays, the United States, not only are businesses open, they're packed with people. And the sensibility and the sensitivity that used to exist in the United States for the Lord's Day has been done away with completely. But it's interesting that the Vatican was concerned at that time, among other things, about the fact that sports were given the prominence that they were on Sunday. Well, as much as that might have been a problem as the Vatican saw it in 1937 in Third Reich Germany, it's of course far, far more pronounced in Europe today and particularly in the United States. The relationship between church and state came to a very noticeable high point, a kind of a climax, in 1938 in Austria. In 1938, a crisis was forced by the regime in Austria, which was essentially a dictatorship. It was a one-party state headed by a man named Kurt Schuschnigg, who ruled through one a single party called the Fatherland Front. And the Schuschnigg government imprisoned political prisoners, including National Socialists and leftists as well, communists and so forth, anybody who was against the regime. And the Schuschnigg government had the support, more or less, during that time, of the Catholic leaders of Austria. But there was immense opposition and unhappiness with the Schuschnigg government. And in 1939, when the government fell apart and Austria became united with the German Reich, there was overwhelming popular support for unification of Austria with the German Reich in 1938, not only by secular Austrians, but by the Catholic leadership of the country, which had to shift quickly from its tepid or more or less lukewarm support for the Schuschnigg government to support for the Hitler government. The main Catholic leader in Austria during this period was a man named Innitzer, Cardinal Innitzer, in Vienna. Cardinal Innitzer met with Hitler in 1938 privately, and he was so strongly impressed by Hitler that he did something very unusual. He issued a public statement in the name signed by himself, the Cardinal of Vienna, and all of the other Catholic bishops of Austria, expressing support publicly for the Hitler government and urging all Austrians to vote in the forthcoming referendum affirmatively, voting yes for the union of Austria with the German Reich. Now, it's important to remember, this is in 1938. This is at a time when the character of Hitler's government was quite well known and well understood. Already the laws were in place that had removed Jews, for example, in Germany, from cultural and political life. It was very clear what the overall nature of Hitler's government was. But the Catholic leaders of Austria issued a public statement urging support for the union of Austria with Hitler's German Reich. It's important to remember that even though the majority of the population of Austria was Catholic, was Roman Catholic, there was and still is in Austria a strong anti-clerical, anti-religious minority in the country. And it's particularly in Vienna, in some of the major cities, in the major urban areas, but particularly in Vienna. And there's always been a strong sort of Marxist element or minority in those places. And the National Socialist State had to take that into account. But very quickly, the Reich Commissar, the man who during this transition period played an important role, made sure that the efforts by some people to remove crucifixes from public places or to seize church property was overturned and that those were not disturbed. The statement of support for the Union of Austria with the German Reich was supported not only by the cardinal and the other bishops in this public declaration, but a letter accompanying with this declaration, signed with the words Heil Hitler, was also issued by the Catholic leaders of Austria. As already mentioned, Innitzer welcomed Hitler personally to Vienna, and he ordered that swastika flags were to fly from all churches in Germany as Hitler entered the city and as the Austria became part of the German Reich. As already mentioned, there was this strong anti-clerical sentiment among many people in Austria, and this led to some tension back and forth between church leaders in Austria and the state. But nonetheless, despite that, overwhelmingly, the leaders of the Catholic Church in Austria expressed and continue to express loyalty to the state. There was never any public condemnation of policies of the Hitler government. In fact, in 1941, the bishops of Austria ordered the reading of a pastoral letter reiterating their support of the war against Soviet Russia, and solemnly declared that Germany was conducting a crusade against a monstrous, and I'm quoting, threat to Western civilization. Rather than keep silent, the Catholic leaders of Austria urged the faithful instead to recognize the danger for all Europe should Bolshevism prevail. Now, within the National Socialist Party, there was a tremendous amount of leeway, latitude, and different views and opinions about the issue of religion. And Hitler repeatedly, and notably during the war period, but also throughout the whole Third Reich period, repeatedly intervened to try to keep things as calm and as orderly as possible with regard to this. In May of 1940, Hitler issued a directive, quote, to avoid all unnecessary measures during the war that could worsen the relationship of the state and party to the church. Well, this didn't entirely calm down the situation, because in early 1941, a dispute arose over the question of crucifixes in schools and public buildings in Austria. And this was prompted by a directive by the party secretary, Martin Bormann, which stated that National Socialism and Christianity are irreconcilable, and took a strongly anti-clerical view in this internal memorandum, this internal statement. Well, this caused a crisis, and Hitler intervened, and there was other things that happened, which points up something about the character of the National Socialist State and the relationship between the Catholic Church and the Christian Church's population and the state during this period of time. During the Third Reich period in southern Germany, which was largely, especially Bavaria, and then after 1938, Austria, which was largely Catholic, the Roman Catholic outlook of the population is reflected in the fact that crucifixes were on display in many public buildings and in schools across this whole area. Well, in 1941, the Gauleiter, or party leader in Bavaria, Adolf Wagner, issued a crucifix decree that set off something of a crisis in relations between Catholics and the state in that province. Well, we'll take a break at this point, and I'll come back in a few moments with the second half of this broadcast. Hello and welcome back. In this broadcast, I'm talking about the relationship and the role of Christianity and religion in Third Reich Germany, especially during the war years, and also the role of religion and Christianity during World War II among the major powers. When we went on break, I was talking about the so-called school cross or crucifix problem of 1941 in Catholic Bavaria. The Gauleiter, the party leader in Bavaria, in the early part of the year, in his capacity as responsible for cultural affairs, ordered that crucifixes were to be removed from schools and public places in Bavaria. Now, this wasn't sometimes it's presented as an anti-religious measure, but it was more accurately should be described as consistent with the American policy of separation of church and state. There were, of course, in Bavaria and in other parts of Germany as well, many people who objected to specifically religious denominational symbols in public places, including schools. And that's the reason why in France during that period of time and today and in the United States, there's a sharp separation of church and state, so that in the United States it's forbidden to have crucifixes or symbols of a specifically religious character in public places. And it was that way of thinking that motivated the effort in 1941 to remove crucifixes from schools and public buildings in Bavaria. But the reaction of the population was very opposed to this. And it's interesting how the state responded. Almost immediately, there were protests, especially by mothers and by Catholic leaders and priests, against this effort to remove the crucifixes. And in fact, even in spite of the decree, none were removed. There were demonstrations outside of the county or municipal buildings. People especially in rural areas, collected signatures and petitions to protest this effort to remove the crucifixes. And many people protested to German officials. It's interesting the kinds of protests they made. Some of them threatened, for example, some mothers threatened to return the Mother's Cross, which had, as already mentioned, a crucifix or a Christian cross on it in protest of this effort to remove crucifixes in Bavaria. And in some cases, parents protested that removing the crucifixes from schoolrooms would make them secular, and as one person, as some said, it would turn them into Jewish schools, that is, secular schools, along the lines of what schools are like here, of course, in the United States, where religious symbols are entirely forbidden. But in one place, 120 women gathered outside the municipal administration office in the town of Bad Kissingen to protest this. And Hitler himself reportedly intervened to overturn this. Another response by Catholic leaders was, a few months later, to the important Catholic bishop in Munich, Faulhaber, issued a statement, a letter, to in the name of all of the Bavarian bishops, to Wagner, who was a cultural affairs minister for the province of Bavaria, protesting against the removal of crucifixes from the public places. Well, the result of all of this was that Wagner rescinded this decree and this order, and crucifixes stayed in place in schools and public buildings in Bavaria and, of course, in Austria. There wasn't even an effort to remove them in Austria during this period of time. But it says something, this entire incident tells something about the relationship between the state and the population and the state and religion. That is, in spite of the reputation of the Third Reich government as being this brutal and inflexible dictatorship, in fact, the leaders of Germany during this period of time were very acutely sensitive to popular opinion, public opinion. And in this case, and in many others as well, taking public opinion into account would rescind and modify laws and efforts that were made. In fact, it's not an exaggeration to say that there was far more sensibility, far more sensitivity by political leaders in Germany during the Third Reich to the religious sensibilities of people, to the religious attitudes of the population of Germans in Third Reich Germany than there is in the United States today. In America today, on issue after issue, the religious feelings and the religious attitudes of the vast majority of people are utterly disregarded. Now, I don't want to whitewash or exaggerate the situation in Germany during this period. There were, as I mentioned already, tensions from time to time between religious leaders in Germany and the political leaders in Germany. But, as already mentioned, the state made sure to guarantee and to protect religious sensibility, religious freedom, and freedom of conscience. Now, priests sometimes were, and pastors sometimes were, arrested and even punished, but not for their religious views. And this is an important distinction. But when they took measures which were illegal for political reasons and for other reasons. One example of this is the case of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who has been elevated almost to a kind of saint-like status among many Protestants because he was a Lutheran minister who was opposed to the Hitler government. Bonhoeffer was executed not for his religious views, but because he was involved in a conspiracy and a plot to overthrow the government and, in fact, murder people. He was a supporter of the conspiracy to violently overthrow the government during a time of war, which in any sort of society, in any society at war, is considered, of course, a crime. But Bonhoeffer has been, Dietrich Bonhoeffer has been elevated to a very laudatory role in American and in European society today because he was anti-Hitler. But the one of the interesting points about that is that his theology, only with great reservation, can even be considered very Christian. His views were so liberal, in fact, that they only with reservation can be considered Lutheran, much less Christian. And it's also important to, again, to keep in mind that in spite of the kind of tensions and so forth that did exist during the Third Reich era, that the vast majority of religious leaders of all denominations were steadfastly loyal to the government and to Hitler until the very end. This was manifest in the aftermath of the attempt to assassinate Hitler on July 20th, 1944, by von Stauffenberg and by another by a small group of conspirators who tried to kill Hitler and succeeded, in fact, in killing others in this bomb explosion on that date in 1944 and to seize power by force in Berlin. Of course, the entire conspiracy was put down very quickly, especially after it became obvious that Hitler had not been killed. But the reaction of church leaders was an expression of the feeling overwhelmingly of the German people in response to the news of this assassination attempt. The next day, immediately following the attempt on the life of Hitler, for example, the provincial bishop of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Hanover issued a public statement headed Gratitude for the Merciful Salvation of the Führer. And this public expression of relief and of gratitude that Hitler had not been killed was typical of the attitude of religious leaders across Germany, and expressed the attitude and views of the vast majority of Germans during that time. This statement by the Evangelical Lutheran Church Bishop in Hanover is typical, and I'm quoting from the statement. Holy merciful God, from the depth of our hearts we thank you that you have protected the life and health of our leader from a criminal attack, and have preserved him in this hour of the greatest danger for our people. In your hands we entrust him. Take him into your merciful protection. May you be and remain his strong helper and protector. Be with our brave armies. May our soldiers fight looking to you. Also, the bishop also issued a statement saying, deeply moved by the news today of the attempted assassination of the Führer, we hereby order that on Sunday, July 23rd, if it has not already been done, that prayers are given in church services along the following lines. And again, the statement says, keep your people in resolute loyalty, courage, and readiness to sacrifice. Through your merciful guidance, help us on the path to peace. Awaken hearts in this grave time. A similar statement was issued by the German Evangelical Church in the church newsletter of the 30th of July, 1944, in response to the attempted assassination. And this, again, is typical of the attitude of church leaders in Germany during the war years. And I'm quoting from the statement. With indignation and disgust, the German people rejects the deed of July 20th, in which, during an hour that demands the greatest solidarity, a murderous and treasonous attempt was made to plunge the nation into unthinkable chaos. From the depths of our hearts, we thank the Almighty for saving the Führer, and we ask that he might continue to protect him. Following the attack on the life of the Führer, the German Evangelical Church Chancellery and the Spiritual Council of the German Evangelical Church has sent a telegram of loyalty to the Führer, expressing our gratitude for the merciful protection. At the same time, the Church's Spiritual Council requests that on the Sunday following the murderous attack, the Führer is prayerfully remembered in all evangelical church services across the nation. Now I want to turn from the relationship of the church and religion and Christianity in Germany during the war to the larger question of the relationship of religion and Christianity during World War II itself, and the role and attitude of religion and Christianity in the Allied countries on the one hand and the Axis countries on the other. Now, of course, typically here in the United States, many people have taken the view that during World War II, the United States was fighting the good fight in the name of Christianity and democracy and freedom, or that certainly the United States represented the, quote, Christian side in World War II, and that Hitler and the Axis represented diabolical, horrible, evil cause on the other one, certainly not a Christian one. And this view that the U.S. was upholding Christian values and that the Germany and its allies represented diabolical and evil values was reinforced over and over in propaganda in the United States during World War II. In August of 1941, Franklin Roosevelt and Winston Churchill met at the famous Atlantic Charter meeting, And during that meeting, in which they spoke about their common aim in destroying Nazism and defeating the Axis, even though the United States was formerly a neutral country, the American president and the British prime minister concluded one session in a religious service by singing the song Onward, Christian Soldiers, to give expression to their view that the Allied cause was the Christian cause. Well, of course, typically in all countries, everyone likes to feel and think that they're on the side of God and God is on their side. Of course, in Germany, churches were issuing similar prayers for their side. And during World War II, for example, the standard belt buckle issued to soldiers in the German army had the words on it, Gott mit uns, God with us, to emphasize the view or the hope that the German soldiers were fighting with God or God was supporting the German cause. But the view that Hitler and his government were anti-Christian, anti-religious, was not just implied, it was made explicit by the American president and by American propaganda during the war in a particularly deceitful way. In October 1941, President Roosevelt, in a nationwide radio address, claimed that he had in his possession a secret document made in Germany by Hitler's government, he said, that is a detailed plan to abolish all existing religions, Catholic, Protestant, Mohammedan, Hindu, Buddhist, and Jewish alike. He said that Germany will impose a non-religious, anti-religious world if Hitler wins. Roosevelt went on to tell Americans and the world that if Hitler wins, quote, the property of all churches will be seized by the Reich and its puppets. The cross and all other symbols of religion are to be forbidden. The clergy are to be forever silenced under penalty of the concentration camp. In the place of the churches of our civilization, there is to be set up an international Nazi church, a church which will be served orders sent out by the Nazi government. In the place of the Bible, President Roosevelt said, the words of Mein Kampf will be imposed and enforced as holy writ, and in the place of the cross of Christ will be put two symbols, the swastika and the naked sword. Well, this is a good example of the big lie, a falsehood without any foundation in fact whatsoever, no basis whatsoever, a complete lie, completely made up, not even a half-truth. But it's important to remember that statements like this by the American president and propaganda put out by the American government during that time were easily believed, readily believed, by the vast majority of the American people. Well, the reality, of course, is very different. America's most important military ally during World War II was the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union, of course, was run by Joseph Stalin and the Communist Party, which wasn't merely non-Christian, it was militantly anti-Christian, anti-religious. Every member of the Communist Party was required to be an atheist. Religion had been brutally suppressed in Soviet Union under the Stalin era. Now, it was relaxed a bit during World War II in order to try to get support from the populace. But fundamentally, the Soviet Union was ruthlessly anti-religious and anti-Christian. And that was America's not only most important ally during World War II, it was America's most important military ally in the entire history of the United States. On the other hand, not only were churches open during World War II in Germany, but they were filled because, understandably, under the horrible pressures of war, with so much death and destruction and suffering, notably through ruthless Allied bombing, many people sought answers and relief in the church, and the churches were filled insofar as they weren't destroyed in bombing during World War II. One of Germany's allies in World War II was the Republic of Slovakia, which became independent in March of 1939 as the country of Czechoslovakia fell apart. The leader of Slovakia during World War II, a German ally, wasn't merely a Christian or a Catholic, he was a priest, Monsignor Josef Tiso. And the Slovak government was very openly, overtly pro-Christian. The same thing was true in Croatia during World War II, where the Catholic leadership was strongly supportive of the government of Croatia, which was a German ally. And of course, the Catholic Church had a privileged, preferred status in Spain under Franco, which was also sympathetic to, supportive of the Hitler government. Moreover, many Catholics and Christians across Europe were very supportive of the Axis cause in World War II, particularly after 1941, when Germany and its allies attacked the Soviet Union and regarded the conflict as a war, in fact, a kind of crusade against a militantly godless government, the Soviet Union and regime. When far from closing churches during World War II, German military forces, as they advanced into the Soviet Union, in Ukraine, and the Baltic states, in fact made it possible and encouraged the reopening of hundreds and hundreds of churches that had been shut down and closed down during the Soviet period. And not surprisingly, for that reason, many people in the Soviet areas greeted German soldiers as liberators from Soviet rule, and especially because, in significant measure, because of the German support during World War II for religious freedom. So that far from shutting down churches, the German forces actually reopened in many, many churches as they advanced into the Soviet Union. Ukrainians, in place after place, blessed German troops as they advanced into the Ukraine. Moreover, many of the those who supported the Axis and German cause during World War II did so, at least in part, out of religious and Christian sensibility. One of the most remarkable figures of World War II was the Belgian personality Léon de Grel. He had begun his career in the years before World War II as leader of something called the Rexist movement. Rex is the Latin word for king, and was a specific reference to Christ the King. It was a specifically Catholic movement, and Léon de Grel was a very devout Catholic. In 1941, with the beginning of the campaign against the Soviet Union, he offered his services to raise a legion of volunteers from the Walloon population, the French-speaking population of Belgium, to volunteer in the struggle and combat against the Soviet Union. And he survived the war, of course, and wrote extensively afterwards, and spoke very, very highly, of course, of Hitler and so forth. But that's not all. In France, a legion of French volunteers was raised of young Frenchmen who volunteered to fight on the Eastern Front against the Soviet Union. And this French legion had the support of French Monsignor Cardinal Baudrillard and Monsignor Maël de Loupe, who also gave their blessing to the French Legion that fought on the Eastern Front with Germany against the Soviet Union. Maël de Loupe at one point concluded one mass with the words of prayerful support for, as he put it, our Most Blessed Father, the Pope, and our Führer, Adolf Hitler. Now, this isn't to say that the Third Reich was overtly exclusively pro-Christian, but the claim made over and over that the World War II represented a struggle on the one hand of the good guys, Christians, on the one hand, and the anti-Christian Nazis on the other, is a complete perversion of the reality. Well, we'll stop at this point and conclude this broadcast. I hope you'll join me for the next Mark Weber Report.